appreciate the fact that I have been invited to come over here and be with you. I'm glad that you're here, and I hope and pray that great things will result. If I were to ask you how courageous you were, for example, if I were to ask you a question like, in your school, if you were the only Christian, would you boldly proclaim that? Would you proudly let everybody know that you are a Christian? How many of you would say yes? Just raise your hand if you think you would. If you were the only person there that followed the Lord Jesus Christ, and everybody else, as a matter of fact, not only didn't want to follow the Lord Jesus Christ, but would make fun of you if you did, not even just make fun of you, but actually would ostracize you because of your faith, would you still do it? Now, it's interesting that only a few hands are going up, so I assume that means one of two things. Either A, you assume these questions are rhetorical and you refuse to answer, or B, that you really wouldn't do it. Which would be a pretty interesting place to be now, wouldn't it? I'm going to work with a story, very familiar story. It's in the Old Testament. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 17. If you happen to bring a Bible with you, you've heard it before, but I want to go through it one more time, maybe get a fresh look at it, if you don't mind, and ask that you'll stay with me and just think it through. You read about a guy here who's probably about 15 years old, and he's going to do a very dramatic thing that God's going to use him for. The story, of course, is the story of David, and it's about a giant called Goliath. You know that. What had happened was this. The Philistines and the army of God was fighting, and they got to this point where that the Philistines were on one side. There were a mountain up here. There was a valley here. And there was a mountain up here. The people of God on this side, the Philistines on this side, this big valley in between, and they get ready to go to war. Now, as they get ready to go to war, what they would do is they'd come up and line up, each one on his respective mountain, and they'd start doing this war cry. That means they were screaming and yelling, getting their adrenaline flowing, pumping themselves up, ready to fight. And so they're screaming, ah! And the Philistines are screaming. And all of a sudden, they see a new player. This guy walks out to the Philistine side, named Goliath, walks down into the valley, and he is 9 feet 6 inches tall. The biggest man I ever saw was Andre the Giant. You guys ever see Andre the Giant on television or anything like that? I was in Atlanta once about to get on an airplane. Andre the Giant came walking up to get on the same plane. Now, this guy was humongous. I mean, he was like this big and that tall. He walked up. I looked at him, realized he was going to get on our plane, and thought, we'll never get off the ground. There's no way. Gigantic man. Yet Goliath's bigger than that. At 9.5 feet tall, you can imagine how big he is. It says that just the breastplate, just the part that he wore over his chest, weighed 125 pounds. I mean, some of you weigh like 125 pounds. He could wear you and not know you were there. Yeah. Big guy. What makes him even bigger is the fact that the average Jewish male at that time, the anthropologists tell us, was about 5'3". Now, think about that. The average Jewish male about 5'3". This guy is 9'6". He's basically two people tall. And he comes walking out here, this gigantic guy, hundreds of pounds, 9.5 feet tall, looking down at these guys, and he says, let's be reasonable about this. Rather than having this army fight this army, I'm the champion for the Philistines. Find your champion and send him down here, and just the two of us will fight, and whoever happens to win will be the victor, and that'll be all right. Now, these guys up here had quit their battle cry. They're not yelling anymore. They're going, and they start looking around for the champion on their side that will go down there. Now, the most logical champion to go is King Saul. The Bible says that King Saul was a head and shoulders taller than the average Jewish male. So let's say he's about, what, 6'3"? Now, obviously, they send their biggest guy. You're going to send your biggest guy, right? So they look around for King Saul, a warrior king, tall, big dude. They look around for him, and he is nowhere to be found. He has gone back to the tent to plan strategy. He was hiding. He was afraid of the enemy, and so rather than face the enemy, he went back to the tent as if he were the general giving commands and nowhere to be found at all, and so he was a coward. And so these people quit screaming, and they all just kind of stood there and watched. And so Goliath goes back up to his side because no giant comes out. That afternoon, they line up after lunch, and whatever they call lunch back in that day and time. They line up after lunch. They decide to do it again. They start their battle cries. Goliath comes back down, does the whole thing over again. They go back up. This goes on for 40 days in a row, twice a day. Can you imagine the battle cry on the afternoon of the 40th day? They know they're not going down there. You say, why did they stay on the battle line? They're probably praying things like, oh, Lord, would you make the giant die in his sleep? Oh, Lord, when he comes down that mountainside, would you just trip him? When he trembles, maybe he'll hit his head on a rock and die. Oh, Lord, deliver us. And, of course, God didn't do that because God didn't want to deliver them without their first having the faith to be delivered. And so, twice a day, 40 days, until David shows up, about 15 years old. And, you know, your 15-year-old guys are kind of weird. And so what happens is... I can't help it. I've got three daughters. I've got a 24-year-old daughter, and I've got a 17-year-old daughter, and I've got a 5-year-old daughter. And guys come around after my 17-year-old daughter. It just so happened God made her beautiful. You say, aren't you proud? Well, I was till I saw these boys lining up outside. And I thought, you know, there may be a blessing in ugliness. I talked to them all, each and every one. They cannot take my daughter out without spending an hour with me. We've had some really neat conversations. If I sense fear, I go for the kill. And here they are. I had one boy who was sweating. It was amazing. You could smell the fear on him. And so I looked at him and said, son, do I need to show you my gun collection or just tell you about it? And he said, you can just tell me, sir. So I got bolder and I said, you know, I can throw a knife pretty good, too. Do you like to go in the backyard and watch me throw it in the tree? And he said, no, sir, I believe you. I looked at my daughter and she's going, oh, man. It's my dad. One day she said, why do you do this to me? I said, it's my job. Daddies are supposed to make their daughters miserable. It's in the contract, you know. She said, but other daddies don't do this to their daughters. And I said, other daddies don't love their daughters as much as I love you then. Because I'm going to protect you at all possible costs. But I learned a lot about teenage boys. And you guys, like I said, you're just weird. And I've tried to teach my daughter that. You say, you really think so? Well, you know, when she gets old enough, then I won't hate you for a while. But then I've got another daughter coming along, and she's 5, and she thinks that already she's 17, which is kind of tough. But here comes this 15-year-old boy. And he comes up and hears the battle cries, and he thinks, all right. Fight. Now, at your school, if somebody screams fight, that's the quickest way to draw a crowd, right? If somebody wants people to sign up for calculus, they could stand outside the room and yell fight. People would run in there. And so he hears fight. He comes running, fight, because they're yelling and screaming. He walks up there just in time to see this giant. Now, he's 15 years old. If the grown man's 5'3", you know, what's he? Down here somewhere, right? They say he's maybe 4.5 feet tall. You say, King David? Well, yeah, he's just 15 years old. He's not a king yet. And he sees this giant, he's like, whoa, look at that big dude, or whatever Hebrew is for dude. And they're looking down there. And nobody goes down. Now, 15-year-olds can do anything. Can't you 15-year-old guys do anything? Yeah, see there we go. I know, I knew there'd be one. I can do anything. You can ask 15-year-old, go kill that giant. Right, I'll do it. I saw a bumper sticker the other day that said, hire a teenager quick. I can still do everything. So what happens is, they start talking among themselves as to what would happen if you killed that giant. And they said, well, the king said that if you kill the giant, you'll be given a fortune, it'll be tax-free, and you can marry his daughter. That'd be kind of like if we got in some kind of big crisis and Bill Clinton came along and said, if you can solve the crisis, I'll give you $1 million tax-free and you can marry my daughter. I guess there are drawbacks to everything, but the process here. No. That was a joke. But I bet he didn't have boys lining up to see her. Anyhow, the process is that was what happened. And so David, the 15-year-old, saying, well, why don't you go down and kill him? And they said, he's a giant. And he said, somebody ought to go do it. Now, I want to tell you something, young folks, right now. You see, you have more courage than we tend to have because of the fact that you tend to have more faith than we tend to have because of the fact that you haven't been whipped as much as we've been whipped. I'm serious. Those of us who have battled longer and harder have a lot more scars. And people with a lot of scar tissue become very afraid. And there are a lot of people in the church today who are scared to death, and therefore, from their fear, they don't do anything. And you get frustrated with us because you look around at all these things that need to be done and wonder why we don't do them. It's not because we're wicked people. It's not because we're people of no faith. We're people of great fear. And you need to forgive us for that. And you need to also understand that when you come along with your great courage and say somebody needs to go kill that giant, what you would expect is that we would become your cheerleaders. That we'd say, you've got the faith to kill a giant. We don't have the faith to kill a giant. You go do it. We'll pray for you. We'll send you on your way. We'll give you a pat on the back. We'll stand on the mountain and scream and yell your name. But that's not what happens when people are operating in fear. Because when they're operating in fear, they don't encourage those with faith. They become afraid of those with faith. So when David said, somebody ought to kill that giant, they turned to him and said, what are you doing here? It was his own brothers. Sometimes brothers don't get along with each other. Have you noticed that? His own brothers turned to him and said, what are you doing here? You should be home tending the sheep, but you're here. What I mean by that is they'll find anything they can that would sound about right to attack you for. And they told him that basically he was vain and he was arrogant and he ought not be there and he ought to go home and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that is the devil talking. He said, wait a minute. The devil would talk to my brothers? Hey, he doesn't play fair. He'll use anybody he can. He'll use wicked people and he'll use good people. And some of you folks already, even though you're 15, 16, 17 years old, have found that you wanted to go out and slay giants. And when you thought the great people of faith in your church would encourage you and back you up, they told you basically to be quiet and sit down. Right? And if you don't have enough courage, what you will do is that you will be quiet and sit down. But there's something wrong in that. Because somebody has to kill that giant. And if the leaders who should be doing it persist in hiding in their tents, making plans, it does not excuse you from the responsibility of knowing there's a giant out there mocking God that somebody needs to slay. And it could be a 15-year-old boy that can do it. David said, I'll kill the giant. They sent him to King Saul. King Saul said, you're going to do what? He said, kill the giant. He said, what makes you think you can do that? Well, I've had some success. Like what? Well, I'm a shepherd boy, you know. Yeah, yeah. He said, one time a lion came up, tried to eat one of my sheep. I picked up a stick, grabbed him by the beard, beat him to death. Another occasion, a bear came along, tried to kill one of my sheep. I picked up another stick, grabbed him by the beard, beat him to death. You know the moral of that story? If I, David, don't have a beard. He said, God delivers me. Great things happen. And so God can deliver me against the bear. God delivered me against the lion. God can surely deliver me against the giant. Just one more animal to go here, you know. Saul said, put on my armor. Now picture this. David's probably about 4'6". Saul's like 6'3". Can you picture him putting on this armor? He can get inside this armor. Be like a tank. He can just move around in there. He said, no, can't do it your way. Well, there's a great lesson there. We'll want to make you do it our way. We want you to wear our armor. David said, can't wear your armor. Can't do it your way. I'm just not the same size you are. I don't think like you think. I can't do something that's untried for me. Just let me do it the way that God will bless me. Let God use my gifts that God gave me, not the gifts God gave you. I'm going to go out there and kill that giant. And he goes out there and walks down into that valley and says, oh, giant! Giant looks at him and sees it's a boy. And the giant is offended. You send a boy to kill me? He looked at David and said, gonna take your head off. Gonna feed it to the birds. If you're 4'6" tall and a 9.5 tall, I mean, this guy's 5 feet taller than you are. And he says he's gonna cut your head off and feed it to the birds. Would you have just a bit of a qualm about fighting him? I mean, would that want to be? Let me tell you something, my young brothers and sisters. The most effective tool that Satan has is deception. He wants to get you to buy the lie, and one of the primary things he will do to immobilize the army of God is to make them afraid. He lies to them so that they're scared, because the lies sound so believable that when you believe them, you become terrified to the point of immobilization. You get so scared you can't do anything. I'm an elder in the Church of the Lord, by the grace of God. I get invited to speak all across this continent for good Christian people everywhere, in addition to doing some speaking for corporate America. And I'll tell you right now, that the army of God is immobilized by fear. We're hardly doing anything because we're scared to do anything. Have you ever been so scared you couldn't move? Literally? My wife and I had our first child when we were 21 years old. We were just children having children, basically. But she came along. My wife had some problems, had to go in the hospital. I was already preaching. I was a preacher back in those days. And after I left after visiting hours, like 9, 9:30, the hospital, came home. And I found myself very uncomfortable, couldn't go to sleep. And then it dawned on me, this is the first time in my entire life I had ever spent the night by myself in a house. And I thought, well, why does that make you scared? You're not scared when Alice is here. Well, that's right, because she can protect me. I prayed and prayed, and finally I went to sleep. Now, about 4:30 that morning, 5, something like that, something woke me up. You ever get awakened, but you're not sure what it was that woke you up, but you know it ain't good? You know, you wake up with the heebie-jeebies from the Greek heebus-jeebus. I woke up with the heebie-jeebies and looked out my window and realized my front porch light was on. Now, the only problem with that is that when I'd gone to bed, my front porch light was off, and the only way to turn it on is to be inside my house. I was not dreaming. I was wide awake. I turned, looked out the door of my bedroom, and I could see from the shadow of that light, the shadow of two people on the wall of my hall. There were two people standing inside my front door. Couldn't see the people, just the shadows. One raised a hand, couldn't see the hand, just a shadow. It appeared as if it were holding a gun. I was at this point somewhere just past terror. I began to look around the room to find a weapon. All I could find was a pillow. I thought, I'll just kill myself. And I thought, well, since I don't have a weapon, I'll scare him. I'll yell out, what do you want? But do you know that fear constricts every muscle in your body, including your vocal cords? And I screamed out, what do you want? And I was so scared, I couldn't run. Well, I'm telling you right now, my brothers and sisters, the Church of God is so scared it can't even run. It sits totally, positively, absolutely immobile. And what we need is a David. Oh, would you like to know what happened? Well, you didn't ask. When I said, what do you want? A woman's voice spoke out. It was my mother's voice. She lived a couple hundred miles away. My mother's voice said, Joe. And I thought, I'm already dead. Turned out my parents had gotten a call in the middle of the night. One of our relatives in Alabama had died, and they had driven by on their way down and had come by. And I said, how did you get in my house? They said, we rang the doorbell for 10 minutes. Then we tried the door. It was unlocked, so we just walked on in. David goes in that valley. The giant starts saying he's going to kill him. David reaches down, picks up 5 rocks. Somebody once asked me, why 5 rocks? I don't know. I wasn't there. I do have a guess, though. Later, you do read that Goliath had 4 brothers. I think he just prepared, right? And David preaches one of the best sermons in the entire Bible when he picks up that rock. Verse 45 beginning, 1 Samuel chapter 17. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin. This guy's loaded. But I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I'll give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and He'll give all of you into our hands. Now there's a sermon, brother. He said, the whole world's going to know you can't defy God, and I'm here to prove it. This is a 15-year-old, 4.5-foot-tall boy talking to a 9.5-foot giant. He said, you blew it, dude. You have defied God, and I'm here to fix it. And when he says, not only with the whole world, no, look what he says next. All those gathered here. I don't see him pointing at the Philistine army when he says that. I see him jerking his thumb over his shoulder. All those gathered here. Who? The people of God. Cowardly. On the mountain. That's who. What are they going to know? God doesn't need giants. God doesn't need swords. God doesn't need spears. All God needs is you. Giant starts running. He was so big, the earth thuds. You guys see Jurassic Park? I kind of picture it like that. Boom, boom, boom. David loads that slingshot. And it's not the kind I grew up with, like, although we were pretty good with that. It's the kind where they take this little pouch and put a rock in there and they start slinging like this. Giant's still running. Boom, boom, getting closer. Comes up with this gigantic sword. I mean, if his breastplate weighs 125 pounds, can you picture what this thing weighs? He gets it up in the air. Boom, David just lets that rock go. Giant goes down. My imagination, I can picture two Philistine soldiers up there watching. One of them says, glides down. I said, oh, man, there's a stream down there. He slipped on a rock. When he gets up, he'll kill the kid. While the giant's down, David runs over and grabs that sword. Now, it's going to take a lot of effort to get it up. But if he gets it up, there's going to be no problem getting it down. And when it comes down, severs diplomatic relationship between Goliath's head and body. Reaches down, picks up the giant's head. I can picture those same two Philistine soldiers. This one looks at that and says, I don't think he's getting up. And they start running. They turn and they run. And all the army of God who's been watching, now they have faith and courage. Because you see, brothers, you don't get faith and courage from talking and yelling and screaming and talking and yelling and screaming and talking and yelling and screaming. You get courage when somebody finally walks out on faith and kills the giant. And when that was done, they rush into the valley behind this 15-year-old boy. They go running up the other side, and they start catching Philistines, and they're slaying them hip and thigh. They are laying waste to them. They're killing the army that defied God, and they're doing it because of the faith of the 15-year-old. Now, there are a lot of people in this room that are over 15 years old. Do y'all have a pass? How'd you get in here? We're talking to these kids, and I hope that you don't get offended by this. There is one place where I gave this message, or at least part of this message, to a group of teenagers, and the adults were so angry with me that I have been banned from speaking in that county in any Church of Christ. Because they said, you told those kids not to listen to us. And that's a sin. My response is, when you tell those kids godly things and they don't listen to you, it is a sin. You are right. But when you tell those kids to sit there and be spiritually dead like you are, somebody needs to tell them to quit listening to you. Because I don't know who it will be, my brothers and sisters. I don't know if it'll be a Reuble Shelley, a Jeff Walling, a Jim Reppert, or you. But somewhere along the line, God surely has to raise up a David. A David is the kind of person who, through great faith, will say, I know that God will win because God has won before. Rather than thinking about all the things that have gone wrong and all the battle scars we have, we need to be thinking about all the things that God has done right and how many lions and bears we have slain. And with that faith, we need to attack these giants because they're not hard to identify. They are everywhere. And if we just go out there, but even if they're bigger, better armed, better equipped, better supported, they don't have God. And if we walk out there and begin to slay giants, the army of God will once again reign supreme. We will turn the world upside down for God. It is time somebody showed us that there is a God in Israel and that He is alive, right? I spent my life looking for a David. Oh, I love Jesus. Don't misunderstand. I'm not a follower of men. I love Jesus. He is my Lord. I give my total allegiance to Him. But I would follow a David that quick if I could find one to follow. Somebody who has finally quit theorizing and finally quit talking and finally started doing what is supposed to be done. They will go out and begin to convict people of sin and call them to penitence. They will go out and begin to show the power of God, and they will take on these gigantic things that Satan has put around us that has totally immobilized us because of our tremendous fear of them. if and when that happens, watch out, devil. Because there'll be a lot of us who will be mighty men. Once we have a leader with that kind of faith and that kind of courage, we too will follow and we'll go and we'll slay the enemy hip and thigh. I love coming to this workshop. This is, by the grace of God, the third time they have invited me here. I love being invited to some of the other workshops like GNU and Jubilee and other places like that. I love the worship in places like this. I love to sing. I love to listen to that last night and think, you know, I'm sure heaven's going to be beautiful, but it couldn't be much more beautiful than this. And the worship part? But wouldn't it seem that somewhere something would happen? And that it wouldn't just be once a year at Tulsa. That somewhere back home, people would begin to fight the giants there, even though they know that they will face tremendous opposition and that satanic forces will tell lies to immobilize you through your fear so that you won't do anything. Now, there's some elders in this audience. They know, as I know, being an elder in the Lord's church, that we have sat in meetings and time and talked about things that should be done and decided that even though they should be done, we won't do it. And the reason we decided not to do it was because we were scared of what it cost us. We were scared of the people that might be angered. We were scared of the people that might write nasty things about us. And by our fear, even though we admitted that it should be done, we decided to do nothing. It seems I recall a story that Jesus told about that. Do you happen to remember it? Three men that were given opportunities. Called talents, but that's a measure of money. Like one was given $5,000 and one was given, what, $2,000 and one $1,000? I got the numbers right? I forgot to recheck that before I got up here. You say, you'd forget something like that? Sometimes I forget who I am, but $5,000, $2,000, $1,000, measures of money. I call those opportunities because when you have money, you have opportunity. Opportunity to do good, opportunity to do bad, right? I know you know this. You've got money. Some of you have credit cards. I asked my five-year-old what she wanted for Christmas. She said, MasterCard. The man with $5,000 goes out and uses it, and what happens? He gets $5,000 more. The man with $2,000 uses that, he gets $2,000 more. $1,000 man said, if I make a mistake, my master might be upset. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hide it. I'm going to bury it a hole. And therefore, when he comes back, I'll give him back his $1,000 and say, Lord, I didn't lose it. Remember that story? The master came back, $5,000 man is now $10,000 man. Good. $2,000 man is now $4,000 man. Good. $1,000 man, still a $1,000 man. He said, what happened? Lord, you a hard man. Didn't want to lose it, so I buried it. You did what? Buried it. You could have put it in the bank and got something from it. Banks aren't safe. Dirt is. Buried it. You remember what he said should happen to that man? First of all, he took it away and gave it to the $10,000 man now, right? Remember what he said he'd do to him? He said, you are afraid. Take him and cast him into outer darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. Where do you think that is? Heard about one young preacher preaching on hell. He's preaching about Judgment Day. He said, on that day, for those going to hell, there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Little lady on the front row said, don't have any teeth. He said, teeth will be provided. Won't it be terrible on Judgment Day to stand before Jesus and he'll say, I gave you all these opportunities. What'd you do with them? Lord, we're afraid we'd mess up. We were afraid. We didn't do anything with them at all. I believe in grace. I believe that just like lying can be forgiven, cowardice can be forgiven. Revelation 21:8 says all liars are going to hell. But I know not all liars are going to hell. The forgiven ones aren't. Right? Revelation 21:8 says all cowardly people are going to hell. Well, not all cowardly people are going to hell. The forgiven ones aren't. So I believe that grace can cover even things like lying and cowardice. But I didn't know one thing, my brothers and sisters. Cowards don't take anybody with them. And cowards don't oppose the devil at all. And in this world, right now, he is unopposed, doing amazing things. So that when I asked you earlier, how many of you, if you were the only Christian in your school, would stand up and boldly proclaim your Christianity, less than a half dozen hands went up out of more than 1,000 people in this room. You know what you are? You're a coward. Can I still go to heaven? Didn't God say in grace, God will take you to heaven? But wouldn't it be something if God gave us some Davids? And that David might be in this audience right now. That David might be you. How can I know if I'm a David? How much faith you got? And what are you willing to do? Because I think it really boils down to what you're willing to do. Back in the history of the Jewish people, in what's known as the intertestament period, between the Old Testament and New Testament, God came into power called Antiochus, I believe it's called, Antiochus Epiphanes. You guys remember him? And y'all go to school with him? Antiochus, you know, some of these folks might have. They're pretty old. Antiochus Epiphanes. He hated the Jewish people. He hated their religion. They really ticked him off. And finally, he made Judaism illegal. He even sacrificed a hog on the altar before God. Can you think of anything more obscene than taking an unclean animal and sacrificing it on the altar at the temple? He defied God. Made it against the law to be a Jew, to worship God. Put people all over the country, kind of like their policemen, looking for people who'd worship God. And they found this woman and her 7 sons who worship God. Rather than executing them out there, for some reason they brought these before Antiochus. He thinks, okay, I'll make a point. He looks at them and he says to them, renounce God or die. He looks at the oldest boy. He's the one to deal with first. He said, what about you? He said, why have you brought us here? What? Why have you brought us here? Do you want to learn about our God from us? No. What do you expect to learn from us? Nothing. Then why have you brought us here? To get you to renounce God? No way. That really made Antiochus angry. He ordered a bunch of fires built and he brought these cauldrons in and he filled them up with water. It becomes very obvious what he's about to do. He said, change your mind? No, sir. Skin him. They took their sharp knives and they took his skin off of him an inch at a time while he was alive. I don't care how brave you are, you'll scream if they do that to you. His mother and his 6 brothers stood there, watched him scream. They took his hands off. They took his tongue out for his arrogance and his insolence. Cut his tongue out, cut his hands off, skinned him alive. When they finished skinning him, they threw him in that pot of water and they boiled him alive. He turned to the second oldest boy and said, what about you? You ready to renounce your God? No. Didn't you just see what I did? Yeah. Skin him. They took his insolent tongue out, they took his hands off, and they skinned him inch by inch, and they boiled him alive. Third boy walked up and did this. Out goes his tongue, off goes his hands, off goes his skin, until he is boiled to death. They finally get to the last boy. Antiochus is now upset because he realizes he's made a blunder. Rather than making Judaism less attractive, he's now made these people into martyrs. So people begin to say their names and use them as matters of courage. And so he's got to talk this last boy into renouncing God, right? Because he's really in a bind now. And he calls this last boy and he says, now look, son, you've made your point. Your brothers have died. There's no reason to make any more point. Not only will I let you live, I'll make you rich. I'll give you anything you want. Just renounce your God. No. Turn to his mama. He said, look, lady, you have watched 6 of your boys die. Your people have made your point. You've got 1 son left. You want to lose your last son? Talk to him. Talk to him. Convince him. Don't watch your last boy die. She walked over to him. thought about what I'd say if that were one of my daughters. What would you say if it were your child? And the sounds of the agony and the scream and the dying is in your ears. And you have one, just one left. Would you say something like, God, there's more than one woman can bear. We've shown our faith. God, don't take my last boy. Surely you understand. Surely you understand. She walked over to a boy. She wrapped him up. And she said, be strong. Die well. And he did. They tortured him more than the others because Antiochus was more angry. But he was strong and he died well. Then they tortured her. And she was strong and she died well. And when I ask you if you would stand up at your school as the only Christian and say that you believe in Jesus and follow Him, a half dozen hands went up. Isn't there something wrong here? Well, it was easy for me to be a Christian when I went to Alabama Christian College in Montgomery, Alabama. That's now called Faulkner University. Joy Wigan has got a display over there for them. Great school where I went to school. It was easy to be a Christian there. What we have to be, my young brothers and sisters, is Christian in front of the giants. The blasphemous giants who defy God. And you, I'm almost done. Listen just one more minute. You cannot use the excuse before God that you just followed our cowardly example, because David took that excuse away from you thousands of years ago. Do you understand that? You say, what should we do? Kill a giant. What giant? We get so scared we can't see them. Lord, I'm not ready for giants, but if you got any pygmies on the other side, send them on here. Here, pygmy, pygmy, pygmy. We go walking between the legs of the giants looking for the pygmies. The devil does not recruit pygmies. All he has are giants. We walk between their legs and say they're not here. They control the world. And we can defeat them. Not one 15-year-old boy, but the whole army of God. Although it may take one 15-year-old boy to be a David to start us. Go home. Start a revival. Start a revival at your school. Start a revival at your church. How do I do it? Pray and do. Quit talking about it. Go do it. But they'll hurt me. Yeah, it's a war. And they hurt you in war. They may kill me. Okay, go to heaven early. But take somebody with you. Is there a David here? Anywhere? Oh, God, raise us up a David. Please raise us up a David. Raise us up 100 Davids, 1,000 Davids. Oh, God, quit letting us be cowards. And Father, we love to talk about it. We love to come over here and be it right here where it's easy. God, would you just make us quit talking and start doing at home where it's hard and the giants live? Oh, God, we need the courage. Call us to commitment. Give us the courage, give us the strength, give us the rocks. and give us the ability to cut through the lies of the giants and to walk in victory. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.